after wishing everyone a good morning. We started this Kal Vachomer. Let's just finish it up on Daf Yud Zayin over here. The top of the Amud. And this is Rav's candidacy for the Sanhedrin to be Metair Sheretz. Uman Nochosh Shememis. A nachash, as a result of the fact that it is such a killer creature, it is marbet tumah. And we're going to soon see whether or not this halacha of marbet tumah is some sort of a deliberate action of killing on the part of the nachash, which might be dependent upon two opinions in the Gemara Bava Kama. And yet, if you come in contact with the nachash itself, tov, you do not contract tumah by having a direct contact with the nachash. But sheret she'eno memis umar betumah, sheretz is not a memis. It doesn't, in that sense, generate tumah in the world. You know, a lot of the dead bodies. Eino din shei tor. How much more so should it be tor if the nachash that's marbe tumah by killing people or killing animals, yet it's tor. So certainly, if you touch the sheretz, it'd be tor. Velohi. Now, the velohi here, please note, is not an argument against Rav. Meaning, Rav is correct that there would be a logical basis for this Kal Vachomer, but Velohi is coming to justify the final conclusion, namely that the Torah says that if you touch it, if you come in contact with the sheretz, you do contract tumah. And why is that? He says the following, that every Kal Vachomer is based on the fact that you have a chumra element and then a kula. So in the case of nachash, Rav's approach was you have a chumra element that you're marbe tumah because the nachash kills. And at the same time, paradoxically, the nachash is not metame with a contact with the nachash. And that's the kula in nachash. So the Kal Vachomer is based on the fact that nachash on the one hand has a chumra element and yet it has a kula. How much more so in the case of sheretz that's lacking, that's missing that chumra element, certainly it should have that kula element. So Gemara says, no, there's no chumra here in the fact that a nachash is marbe tumah. That's not a chumra. Why? Because midi dehavi akotz bi alma. No, it's literally the Gemara is saying that just like in the case of a kotz, even though you can use the kotz as a murder weapon, and therefore it's marbe tumah bi olam, so what are you going to tell me that's a chumra of ribui tumah, and yet we have the kula that if you touch the coats, you don't contaminate yourself with tumah. So it's really, it's hard to say that you found a special case in nachash for basing yourself on a Kal Vachomer, that like nachash teaches me this unique principle that even something that's marbe tumah in itself is not metamen. That's not unique to nachash, because in the case of kotz, in and of itself, it is a marbe tumah. If it's used as a murder weapon, it will kill and be marbe tumah, but yet any contact with the kotz itself directly, if the kotz is not metame. So there's nothing here in nachash that could prove to you that even though there's ribui tumah in the case of nachash because it's a memis, nevertheless, it's tar. How much more so in sheretz, which is not a memis, how much more so it should be tar? It shouldn't be metame. Well, that's not so, because I have already a precedent in the case of kotz, which is a marbe tumah, and yet it is not metame. So therefore, there's no Kal Vachomer of it. Meaning, if you want to know whether or not a sheretz, when you come in contact with it, is metame or not, you cannot derive any conclusion from nachash, because this halacha of ribui tumah has nothing to do whatsoever with whether it's a metame or not. I'll prove it to you, because in the case of kotz, there's also ribui tumah, and yet it's not a metame. So yesterday we looked in this note here, the name of a sefer called the Paras Yosef. Let's go over it again. And he has a Gemara in Bava Kama. And the Gemara in Bava Kama, Daf Chav Gimel Amid Beis, has two opinions about basically whether Nachash is actively killing its victim, which is called Nachash Me'atzmo Meki, or the Nachash, on the other hand, is not a killer in the deliberate sense. It's not an Ose Maise Me'atzmo, but rather Eres Ben Shinavu Omid. That the Eres just is there between his teeth. It doesn't mean that the Nachash has to do some sort of action to bring up, you know, regurgitate, so to speak, this Eres, this poison from within its body. Okay, so now let's see how these two opinions in the Gemara could explain the back and forth, you know, this dialectic between Rav, who presented this Kal V'Chomer from Nachash, and the Gemara's rejection thereof. How is this dependent upon these two opinions about Eres Nachash Ben Shinav who Omed, or Eres is Nachash Me'atzmo Mekir? Meki. So he says the following. If you assume that Eres Nachash Ben Shinavu Omeid, then the Gemara's Maskon is correct, and Yesh Laduno Kikotz Mamish, that this special Chumrah that we find in Nachash, that even though it's Marbe Misa, it's Marbe Tuma, nevertheless it's not Metami in and of itself, we find a precedent for that in Kotz. And the analogy between Nachash and Kotz is a perfect analogy, where in both cases, you know, you're talking about an object that's a weapon, a murder weapon that kills something, but it doesn't in any way actively do this. So that's called Kikotz Mamish. But just one last sentence here. However, if you hold Nachash Me'atzmo Meki, then the Nachash is an active, deliberate Mamis. So then the Gemara's equation to Kotz is not appropriate. Why? Ein l'damosa l'kotz. Shari motzi es ha'eres me'atzmo, this is called Meki, ubirtsono. The Nachash is the aggressive and deliberate killer of the person, that he actively does something in order to get that eres up from the bottom of his body in some gland and to spill it and inject it into his victim's body in order to kill his body. It's a kind of ratzon. Again, I don't want to get into questions about, you know, but does an animal have choice, decision, freedom of choice or not? But there's some element of mirtzono here, according to this presentation. And in the case of the coats, clearly the coats is an inanimate object, and it has no ratzon. It's just being used as a weapon in the hands of the person who's using the coats to pierce someone. And it's just a kli. It's just an inanimate vessel that's being used. But it's not a mamis. So therefore, the Gemara says, "Ein l'damoso l'kotz." Meaning, again, Rav. This would be an explanation for Rav. Rav would say that the Kal V'Chomer is very appropriate because what we have here is a chumra and yet a kula, a paradoxical situation in Nachash. The chumra is that the Nachash is actively mar betuma, and yet the kula is that nevertheless the Nachash itself is not a metame. Is that clear? I just want to take one little break. Okay, now he has a kasha here from the Sanhedrin Ketana, one of the acronym on Masechta Sanhedrin. Ketzad nitan l'damos kotz l'nachash. How does the Gemara in its maskana establish an analogy between this thorn, this very sharp piece of wood, and the Nachash? Are kotz li olam eno memis mi atzmo el ha'odam sha'ochazo v'doker bo hu meimis. L'fichach ein bo tuma v'ol nachash shememis midas atzmo hoyim en adin shetehei bo tuma. In other words, I think if I understand correctly, even if I maintain the position that Eres Nachash Bein Shinav Omeid, who Omeid, but nevertheless the Nachash is actively biting someone and killing someone.
Has a different Ashura Mu'ad.
And therefore it should have the status of Ashura Mu'ad. So you can't compare Ashura Mu'ad to a coat.
Ashura Mu'ad is not Matame.
Yeah, but again, Ashura Mu'ad, you're talking about a case of a Mamis? You mean Ashura Mamis?
Ashura Mamis, if that's Mamis, but we would. It's not like a Sheretz that would be.
Your question is a little bit advanced. I'm still on a basic level. Your question is an excellent question. Let me just see if I can get by the easy part, and then we'll get. Your question is much more sophisticated. So just on the basic level, what we're saying is the following in the Kasha here in the Sanhedrin Ketana. How could the Gemara postulate an analogy between a kotz and a nachash? In the case of a nachash, nachash is clearly a mamis. And even though, again, this is where I'm adding a little paragraph here, a little parenthesis, even though the nachash has nothing more than just to bite a person, because the eris is there already ben shino, but nevertheless, the nachash bites a person, and therefore, in that context, it's a mamis. But in the case of the coats is only a tool in the hands of a man who's killing someone. So we don't understand that equation.
And a nachash should be chayel misa, no?
Could be a nachash is to be put to death even before it kills someone.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. But again, Rabosa, I'm just trying to get the basics here, and then you'll hit me with all the sophisticated questions. Just let me see if I can understand the basics. So what is the equation here between nachash and coats? Offhand, there's no analogy. So he says, Yeshlomar, perhaps, Shemeachar Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Im Yashuch HaNachash below Lachash. And the Darshu Chazal, there's a drasha in the, he quotes in the name of the Medrash, She'ena nachash makish adam, that a nachash will not bite a person, ad shalochashim lo min hashamayim, right? The Pasuk says, below lachash. Lachash means a whisper. And Chazal interpreted, this means they whisper up in heaven. Laso zos. Which basically means that the Nachash is an agent of the Almighty. Im kein, gam hu eino ose, el kamaisa kotz, shochez bo adam, vidoker acherim. You know, it's just like the kotz is an agent in the hands of the rotzeach, who's doker, so too the Nachash is an agent in the hands of the Almighty, who is using the Nachash to mete out Misa to this person. In that sense, we have an analogy between the coats and the nachash. Okay, now let's go slowly. So Asha, let me take Asha's question first for a minute and then your question second. So Asha is asking, why does the Gemara need a kal v'chomer from nachash? Why not just take the case of a shara memes? Is that your question, Asher? Because in the Shor HaMemes also, it's the same as in Nachash, and even if you'll tell me, yeah, so one second. So, again, the Kasha of the Sanhedrin Ketana would still be valid even if the Gemara had quoted the case of Shor HaMemes, because the Shor HaMemes is an active, belligerent Shor, and that's not analogous to the case of a coats, because the coats is not anything more than a tool, a weapon in the hands of this. So basically what I'm suggesting, you'll tell me why you have a problem with this, is that you don't gain anything by quoting the case of Shor. On the contrary, you gain something by quoting the case of Nachash, because in the case of Nachash, we want to be Mechadesh based on a pasuk in Tanakh, that the Nachash is nothing more than a a tool or an agent in the hands of the Almighty. Again, that could be true for the case of Shor as well. I have no doubt about it, but we have a pasuk, and the pasuk is referring to Nachash. Yeah. So, what is your?
I was
give me a chance to drink my.
It was more on Eres Ben Sheep, another Omeid, that like the Shor has his horn. That's his. It's his. I mean, it's like it's what he does with it.
So, isn't it the same as an Nachash? According to this Sanhedrin Ketana, he asked the question: Ketzad nitan ledamos kotz lenachash? Hare Kotz Liolam Eino Memus, but in the case of Nachash, he says he's a Memus Midas Atzma. And I think you'd have to say the same thing about a Shor, that the Shor makes a deliberate decision to attack a human being. So basically, you can equate Nachash and Shor, and in both cases say they belong to one category, but to equate that, to compare that to a Kotz, is not a fair equation, because here the animal is the active agent. And therefore, Rav's Kal V'chomer makes a lot of sense that even though it's an active agent that's Ma'ar V'tumah, nevertheless it itself is not Metameh. If you'll ask me why the Gemara quoted Nachash and not Shor HaMuad, I would answer to you because of this pasuk, Im Yishoch HaNachash Belo Lachash. So the Gemara wants to open up the possibility in the Maskana that Nachash is exactly the same as Kotz. Why? Because in both cases, there's no element of deliberate responsibility, not even in the case of Nachash. Why? Because the Torah says below the Nachash can't do anything without the Lachash, which is the Lachash from Shemayim. Reuven, what was your question?
Well, just before you get to my question, I really don't follow the comparison, because the Kotzim for bushes are meant as a defensive element to scare away elements from coming near or close to the bush and taking the flowers and so forth. Whereas the horns on a shore is clearly offensive.
Right, but again, look, we're focused now on a case of ribui tumah. So that although you're right, that a kotz doesn't have to be a murder weapon in its very nature, but on the other hand, in a case and in a scenario where the kotz was used as a murder weapon, it becomes a marbe tumah. So the kotz is now the vehicle to bring lots of tumah into the world, and yet it itself is tahar. And if that be the case, then you didn't find anything unique about Nachash, because Nachash also is marbe tumah in the same way that a kotz is marbe tumah, as an agent in the hands, not of another human being in this case, but in the hands of the Almighty. And therefore the fact that it is Ma'ar B'tumah, but yet it's not Metameh, that's not surprising. That doesn't set any new precedent, because we already have that in the case of a Kotz.
I hear you. I see. So, I don't know. In my mind, it's apples and oranges.
Yeah.
It's
again, so you're on Rav's team, I guess. Okay, but the Gemara rejects Rav because the Gemara wants to somehow justify the fact that, in fact, the Sheretz is Metameh, and this Kal V'chomer is not going to teach you that the Sheretz is not Metameh. What you want to prove, that the Nachash is not Metameh, and therefore the Sheretz is not Metameh, there's no proof at all. Okay, the Nachash is Ma'ar B'tumah. There are many things that are Ma'ar B'tumah under various circumstances, if given the green light from above. But that doesn't mean that therefore they should be metame. So to equate that with sheretz, and therefore derive conclusions that sheretz, the Gemara says you have no valid case for that. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. This is the sugya that we began at the end of our discussion yesterday. So let's just see where we're up to in the Gemara. We're on Daf Yud Zayin, Amid Beis. And let's see how many lines down we got. Four lines down from the top, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Om Rav Yudom Arab, the fourth line down from the top. Now it seems, as we go along, that the sugya now turns to the question of Shivim Lashonos. Let's go back for a second to Rav Yochanan on the bottom of Yud Zayin Amid Beis, which was three lines up from the bottom. And if you recall, Rabbi Yochanan gives a long list of qualifications. I meant to say Yud Zayin Amid Aleph, sorry. and he gives a long list of those qualifications that are absolutely necessary in order to sit on the Sanhedrin. And on the list is something called Yodim B'ayin Lashon. So you cannot sit on the Sanhedrin unless you know 70 languages. That's Rabbi Yochanan. Now we're going to get a different perspective from Rav. You know, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan were very often Bari Plugta. Om Rav Yudam Rav, Kol Ir She'ein Bo Shnayim L'daber V'yechad L'shmoa Ein Moshivin Bo Sanhedrin. Now, Rav excludes the case where you don't have three people who understand the language. Two of those three people can speak all the languages. One, the third guy, he's able to understand those languages, although he cannot speak those languages. A lot of people tell me, I understand Hebrew, but I cannot speak Hebrew. So that's natural, that's normal. Till you get proficient in spoken, that's already a different madrega. But what's the total number here, according to Rabbi Yudam Arav?
Three.
Two of which can't speak the 70 languages, one of which can't even speak the 70 languages, but he understands the 70 languages. And together they make a triumvirate of three. And that's enough. Very strange, because earlier we had a sheet of Rabbi Yochanan that you need as a prerequisite for your candidacy to sit on Sanhedrin to know 70 languages. Which would mean that every member of the Sanhedrin has to know 70 languages. All of a sudden, Rav is coming along and he's reducing the number to three. Three out of the entire, let's say for example, in the case of Sanhedrin Ketara, we have 23 judges. Three out of the 23 know the languages. And the balance, the other 20, don't even know the languages. Well, that's against Rabbi Yochanan. Now, I shouldn't tell you that that's something catastrophic or shocking, because Rav has the right to argue against Rabbi Yochanan. But it's a little bit strange, because look at the Seder HaDvarim. Rabbi Yochanan is all the way back at the beginning of the Sugya. He gives you a long list of the qualifications that are necessary for membership in the Sanhedrin. Then the Gemara goes off on a tangent here with a whole discussion about another statement of Rav, and that is that if you talk about the intellectual power of a member of the Sanhedrin, he has to be so powerful intellectually that he can come to the conclusion that Sheretz is not Vitamin based on a Kal V'Chomer. And after this long digression, the Gemara all of a sudden seems to be swinging back to the original statement of Rabbi Yochanan, that in order to sit on Sanhedrin, you cannot qualify unless you know Shivim Lashon. Now, how do I know that this discussion about Rav here is about knowing languages? This I know from Rashi. Because if you take a look at the fifth line down from the top, Shnayim L'daber, Rashi says B'Shivim Lashon. I mean, that's not explicit in the Gemara, but it definitely is explicit in Rashi. So Shnayim L'dav means two out of the members of the Sanhedrin know how to speak the 70 languages. V'yechon, and the third member of the Sanhedrin, he knows L'shma'a, he can understand. Who maven, but B'shivim L'shon. Af p'sheni yodei L'hashiv. He cannot respond in that language, he doesn't have that proficiency, but he definitely understands the language. So Rashi certainly is learning that this sugya is all about languages. And I have to submit to you, although I'm a little bit hesitant, that Rabbi Yudam Arav is arguing against Rabbi Yochanan. In other words, the requirement of knowing the 70 languages is not a characteristic or a quality for membership, for a candidacy in the Sanhedrin Agdola. That's not so. But rather, the Sanhedrin itself has to be made up of at least three people. Now, let's go back to the original Shivim Lashon. Rashi says that if the judges will not know those languages, we'll have to set up what? A Meturgamon. And Rashi says that that's a problem in Eidus. You remember that last Rashi on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph? Rashi says, Havilei Eid mi pi Eid. In other words, I'm going to have to rely on the testimony, the transmission of the Meturgamon. But I don't have, as a judge, I don't have a direct Kabbalas Eidus from the Eid. That's called Eid Mi Pi Eid. So it's like one person tells his story to another person, who in turn...
is lost in translation.
But if that's the case, then I can understand Rabbi Yehuda Merav. I don't need to have every member of Sanhedrin know all 70 judges. I need what's called Kabbalas Edus, because Rashi says that the requirement of 70 languages is for Edus, correct? Otherwise it'll be Ed Mipi Ed. Well, how many judges do we need to receive the Edus? We don't need that all 23 judges receive our Makabal the Edus. All we need is that a three-member group, or let's call it a representation of the Sanhedrin, they will receive the Edus. They now can present that as evidence in front of the entire court.
So they're going to act as translators, so to speak.
Yeah, but only, again, because we passed the Edus. Again, we don't need a translator except for what's called Haggadah Edus. Haggadah Edus is completed with Kabbalah Edus. How many Dayanim do we need for Kabbalah Edus? 3 Dayanim. That's all we need. So it's not that the 3 Dayanim are now transmitting the Edus in a new Haggadah Edus, which would be Ed Mipa. Haggadah Edus means if the original story and the testimony has not been given directly to the Beis Din, which means that there was no Beis Din to be makabel that Edus, but rather someone in the middle, that go-between, that becomes Ed Mipa. But if Beis Din was makabel the Edus, then it becomes evidence based on 2 Edim, and all the interrogations are done by the Beis Din. Now, within the Beis Din, there's another Beis Din. There's the greater Beis Din, which is called the Sanhedrin HaKatana, made up of 23 judges. They're going to issue the final verdict, which means they'll condemn the accused to death, and that's the authority of the Beis Din of 23 judges. But Kabbalas Edus per se only requires 3 Dayanim. And once the Edus was miskabel, there's no problem of Ed Mipa. Now we have evidence on the table, and those 3 Dayanim will convey their assessment of the of all the accusations against the Nidon based on that evidence that they've already received. But we've already gotten past the issue, the problem of Kabbalas Edus. We've circumvented the Ed Mipa because we have three judges who can receive this Edus directly from the mouth of the Eid, or the two mouths of the two Eidim. So the way Rashi would learn this sugya, I think, is that Rabbi Yehuda Merav is up in arms, and he says, how could Rabbi Yochanan say that knowing 70 languages is a prerequisite for a candidacy as a judge to sit on Sanhedrin? No. All we need is 70 languages, the knowledge of 70 languages, to circumvent the problem of Ed Mipa. If you have 3 judges and they understand those 70 languages, so Swahili and they understand, and then the 2 witnesses will testify in Swahili. By the way, that's highly unlikely, but it could be possible. And then the 3 judges will understand what they say. Edus Mamish, without any intermediary, there's no Miturgamon. It's Farta Gamaisa. We've gotten past Kabbalas Edus. Let's go on. We have now evidence against the Nido.
My question is, are they forming a smaller Sanhedrin of 3? Or are these 3 acting as targumim and translating? And again, it's going back to the 23 for the vote, and the 23 are darshining out if he's.
So what are your 2 possibilities? Can you review it one more time?
One possibility is you're saying that 3 have to be able, 2 have to be able to speak it, understand it, and 1 has to understand, which means you have 3 that will be makabel the Edus.
Right.
Correct. Do they act as themselves as a minor Beis Din now? The 3 of them would come up with the Din.
In a certain sense, they're a minor Beis Din to function for Kabbalas Edus. But as far as the ultimate Din,
the Gemar Din is going to be by 23.
23, correct. Including
they're all
going to
vote. They're all, but then there would have to be the other 20 would not know exactly what's going on. So the 3 would have to convey all the facts to
correct.
Them.
And that's fine. There are many pieces of evidence that were revealed by some members of the Sanhedrin, and they will share it with the other members of the court, even though other members of the Sanhedrin were unaware of that evidence.
So what's the difference between that and having a separate, an expert interpreter, a targum that's...
Well, of course, the expert interpreter is breaking up the Kabbalas Edus. Why? Because the Kabbalas Edus has to be Mipi Ha'ed and not Mipi... not Ed Mipa Ed. So there was never, if there was never a Kabbalas Edus, then the Edus is not valid because the Metargamon is the one who's transmitting the Edus.
Okay.
But in the case where you have 3 judges who understand Swahili, then you have a direct Kabbalas Edus from the Mipa Ed Atzmo. It's not Ed Mipa Ed. Now there's evidence that it happens to be that 3 of the judges are privy to that evidence. they'll share it with the balance of the court, and that's fine.
Okay, so it's a direct link versus bringing in an expert.
Right.
Now
just we'll give Steve a chance, because, you know, he...
The three would have to know all 70, or just amongst the 23, there's always three who know the 70.
I don't understand. Say it one more time.
So
it sounds like you're saying the same thing.
Is it the same three that have to know all 70 languages, or is it just amongst the 23, all 70 languages are known by at least three different people? So if there's four of us, you know, we could know 65 of them between three of us, and the other ones know the other five.
I see what you're saying. Oh, wait a minute. You're saying the following. That let's say you have three judges that know Swahili, but they don't know French, let's say, right? So it doesn't matter if you have three other judges that know French, in the case where eight of them testify in French, although the three who know Swahili could not be Makabalim. Yeah, that's exactly what we're saying. What we're saying is that we need a Kabbalist Eidus based on three witnesses that know that language, correct? The only thing is, how do I fit that into the... Right? L'daber, Rashi says, L'daber v'shivim lashon. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't really fit into Rashi. Because Rashi says that you need two L'daber v'shivim lashon, and then finally the last one who understands shivim lashon. You hear what Steve is asking?
Yeah, yeah.
Why should I need...
You break it apart.
Why should I require that Shivim, any three judges on the court will know all 70 languages? In other words, even according to Rav, it comes out that the Nalyans, it means that the Sanhedrin has to have three members who are capable of Kabbalah's Eidus in all scenarios. Why? Because they know all 70 languages. So it means that even Rav is addressing not only the qualifications for a Sanhedrin, but the qualifications to sit on the Sanhedrin, because you need an individual judge who knows 70 languages. And it comes out like this: you don't need all 23 judges to know 70 languages, because the whole purpose is Kabbalah's Eidus. So we need that this Beis Din has within it three judges that will clinch under all circumstances the Kabbalah's Eidus. Very complicated. Yeah, it's difficult to put this into Rashi. Now, we haven't even scratched the surface here of this Gemara, because we're going to present now a whole nother approach to this Gemara. And the approach that I want to present to you is the Abrama and the Meiri and the Ran. I mean, to tell you the truth, everybody gangs up on Rashi. Let me present to you some of the objections to Rashi, and then we'll spill the beans and present a whole new interpretation of what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav is talking about. Number one. Second, let me just get the place. Oh, so the Yad Rama wants to know, why is it that this statement of Rav doesn't appear immediately after Rabbi Yochanan's statement? Rabbi Yochanan says that amongst the qualifications for judgment, for a judge to sit on the Sanhedrin, he has to be Yodea Shivim Lashon. And in the middle, the Gemara goes off on a tangent and discusses Yodei L'Tayres HaSheretz, which is more of an intellectual issue. But what about the knowledge of languages? At this point, even before we get into intellectual, you know, this Pilpulo Shel Hevel, as Tosfos says about the Kal Vachomer and so forth, let's right now discuss Rabbi Yochanan. Is Rabbi Yochanan right that every single last member of the Sanhedrin has to know 70 languages? Why the break in the middle? And the Abrama is going to see in this break in the middle an indication that Rashi's pshat in the sugya is not correct, that there must be a new discussion here from Yehuda Amar Rav that is independent of Rabbi Yochanan. Furthermore, says the Abrama, let's just read the next line in the Gemara. The Gemara says that if you cannot guarantee three people understand 70 languages, then the Gemara says, Beitar, in the city of Beitar, Havashlosha. They, you know, the statement here is praising, so to speak, Beitar. Why? Because in Beitar they actually had three judges who knew 70 languages. In Yavne, they had four judges who knew 70 languages. And then, you know, they enumerate who these people were. There was Rabbi Eliezer, there was Rabbi Yeshua, there was Rabbi Akiva, and then there was Shimon HaTimni. Now, Shimon HaTimni, who's listed here as number four for the city of Yavne, you'll notice something about his name. Forget about the word Timni for a moment. But what's different about his name than the other three names? There's no Rebbe before it. And that explains the next few words in the Gemara. The Gemara says, V'shimon HaTimni don lifneihem bakarka. That means that he didn't sit as the other judges did on a chair, but rather he sat on the ground. Now, whenever you have someone sitting on a chair and someone sitting on the ground, that's always indicative of what we call a Talmud Rebbe relationship. That to some extent, Shimon HaTimni is a Talmud of these three greats, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, that fact that he was a disciple indicates two things. Number one, he did not get to the point of smicha, and therefore his name is not Rebbe. And number two, he had to sit on the ground. Now, this is really problematic in and of itself, which I want to pick up as a separate topic, because the Gemara says in Megillah that Talmidim were not meant to sit on the ground. But that we'll get to a little bit later. Rabbeinu Yonah says that Shimon HaTimni knew 70 languages, but yet he was a Talmud and he never reached smicha. So he says the following. If you look at the Gemara carefully, it says don lifneihem. And don lifneihem means that he is an essential and integral part of the Beis Din. So why is he sitting on the karka? Because he doesn't have smicha. So we're in this paradoxical situation where Shimon HaTimni, on the one hand, is done with Nahem, and the other hand, even though he's part of the Beis Din, he's done with Nahem, yet he's sitting on the karka because he's a Talmud. So the Rabbeinu Yonah asks the following. Mashma, it would seem from the language that Shimon HaTimni done with Nahem, Sha'osek imoem b'masa umatin shel Torah, that the reason why he is done with Nahem is because he has an understanding of the Torah and the dialectic of the Torah, the svaras back and forth. This is not like Rashi. Rashi says that apparently, although he doesn't say it explicitly, by implication, that he, Shimon HaTimni, knew 70 languages, correct? Because Rashi's learning that this whole sugya is referring to knowledge of languages. Again, it doesn't say that in the Gemara. Keep that in mind. Rashi's the one who interprets the Gemara as referring to languages. If the Gemara then calculates in Beitar who are the three judges that were on the court, that they knew 70 languages, and then there's a fourth member of the court who is Dan Lifneihem, and that was Shimon HaTimni, he also knew 70 languages. That's not the impression you get over here. The impression he gets, says the Yad Ramah, is that Shimon HaTimni, although he may or may not have known languages, he was Dan Lifneihem. Dan Lifneihem means he understood the Torah and its inner mechanisms, you know, its svaras, its masu matan, and therefore he could be part of the Sanhedrin. So why then does this Gemara present him as the Revi, right? It says Ubiyavna Arba, which Rashi interprets means there were four individuals who knew 70 languages, and the fourth of them is Shimon HaTimni. From the language of Don Lifneihem, you get the impression that Shimon HaTimni may or may not have known languages. That's not, whereas he had the koach ladun. Ladun means osek imoem b'masu mata. Now we have a kasha from the Meiri. He says lepirush Rashi divrei Rav Sosrim. Rashi would have it that Rav is against the Gemara of Rav Yochanan back on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, who says that Ein Moshivin Sanhedrin Ela Dayonim Ayodim Shivim Lashon. Mashma shekol echad me'atayonim tzichim lios bikiyim b'shivim lashon. And yet Rav says all you need is three. Now again, we pointed out that that's not a tragedy, because it could very well be that Rav is rejecting Rav Yochanan, but the Meiri didn't understand it that way. The Meiri didn't think that Rav is arguing against Rav Yochanan here. There's no indication to that effect. So how could Rav say that it's enough that you have three judges who know 70 languages, the way Rashi interprets this sugya, when that's directly in opposition to Rav Yochanan? Haran hosif, the Haran asks another kasha. Lo yitochen lomar shedai b'shlosha dayonim ayodim b'shivim lashon. Rashi's interpretation of Rav could not be valid, and all you need is three dayonim who know 70 languages. Why? Me'acha shekabolas edus tzricha leoses al yidei kol adayonim yachad. He's not willing to accept that three dayonim of the Bezdin, of Sanhedrin, of 23, three out of the 23 can accept the edus. But rather, all the dayanim have to accept the edus. Why? Because you cannot judge a case without kabbalas edus. So it's not enough that you break off a piece of the Sanhedrin and have them representative of the Sanhedrin for kabbalas edus, but rather the edus have to be given in front of the bezdin. And here we need a bezdin of 23 judges. It means that all 23 judges have to accept the edus. Ubehefrek, therefore, you have no choice but tzar kulam sheyu bekiyim b'shivim lashon. Now, in brackets here, he has a quote from the Binyan Shlomo who tries to defend Rashi. I'm going to skip that for a moment and come back to it. So again, how many kashas do we have on Rashi? I think we had four kashas, am I right? There were two kashas, two objections raised by the Yad Ramah. And that is, why did the Gemara wedge in the discussion about Yodel, the Tyrus, Asheretz, which is a question of the intellectual capacity of the candidate for Sanhedrin? That would seem to be out of place. The second question was that the Gemara says that Shimon HaTimni is done with Nahum, which sounds like that Shimon HaTimni, although he may not have known these languages, but he was Osek Imoyim B'masu Matan, and that's not true according to Rashi, because if we call him a Revi, it means he's the fourth guy who knows 70 languages. The Meiri is upset with Rashi because he doesn't want to postulate a machlokas between Rav and Rav Yochanan. And the Ran doesn't accept that you could have this representative, you know, body of three judges who are accepting the Amos. All of the Bezdin, the entire Bezdin has to receive the Amos. And if they don't know the 70 languages, how are they going to accept the Amos? Ulafichach, Pirish Hayad Ramas HaSugya. The Yad Ramah offers a different interpretation of the sugya of Rav. Kipirusho shel Rav Shrira Gon Hasover. Shemember zu nemra legabe ha'avona b'torah. When Rav speaks about three who know, there are the two of which are medabrim and one is a shomea, he's talking about the intellectual comprehension of Torah qualifications for Sanhedrin. Dahainu, shetzarch sheyu b'Sanhedrin lefachot shnei anoshim hayodim ledaber. Okay, now what does the word ledaber mean in the context of havanas haTorah? I mean, if you understand the Torah, then presumably you're able to be medaber in Torah. So what does it mean that two of the members of this court of 23 judges are capable of being medaber in the Torah? Says Rav Shri Yagon, Shebrura lahem mishnasam, their clarity of understanding, of comprehension, is so great. Ubara lahem talmudan, it's the Talmud, their knowledge that they studied is so clear to them. The Ein Toim Bidvar Mishnah, they know it so well, so thoroughly, that they will not make any mistakes. Is Heim Re'uyim L'Shikol Adas V'yesh Bahem L'Kidei L'Daber B'Iskei Halachos. I'm having a deja vu here, but I can't remember. Didn't we have something similar? Ooh, Yeah, help me out here, Rabbi Yosef. Does anybody remember where we said that the Sanhedrin has to have their finger on the pulse and know the needs of the community so that they can enact new laws? Do you remember, who was the one who... I can't remember right now. It means I have to do Chazar. Anyway, we had such a thing that the Sanhedrin has a double capacity. They're not only deciding and litigating between two claims, counterclaims, but sometimes they have to enact decisions on behalf of the entire club. That was Achitofel.
That's why they had to be one for each Sheva.
Because each Shevet has its own needs and therefore needs its own takanos. Anyway, so let's get back to Rav Shmuel Gaon and leave out my deja vu for a couple of times. So the Rav Shmuel Gaon is telling us that within the Sanhedrin you have to have X number of judges in order to give the Sanhedrin that gushpanka, that status as a Sanhedrin, who are capable of what he calls ledaber b'iske halachos, which he explains to mean a shikul hadas that goes beyond this particular case that's in front of us, and rather climbs up to the abstract principles of the Torah, that they can determine the principles of the Torah, and that's what they can teach. So it means that a member within the Sanhedrin, we have to have a few members, we'll see exactly the number, who are teachers of Torah. Teachers of Torah is not like Azariah Berzon, you know, that I'm not talking about someone who says a blotch here. He means by teachers of Torah that they know the Torah inside out, and it's brura lehem mishnasa ubar lehem talmudo v'einam tov b'dvar mishnah. They make no mistakes because everything is clear. You know, they know the Torah like you know the palm of your hand, if I can use that proverbial phrase, although I don't know beans about the palm of my hand. But anyway, is lakach, therefore they are ru'uyim l'shikol adas, meaning they can go up to the abstract principles of halacha, and if there's any issue as to how to interpret the law, they can make that decision. That gives them the status, according to Shri Ragon, of midabrim. They are midabrim v'iske halacha. How many do we need? How many medabrim do we need, according to Rav?
Two,
correct?
Mm-hmm.
Does everybody see that, two?
Yeah.
Oh. Now, v'nosaf l'kach, sarach she'e ode echad, sha'af al pi she'eino yodeh l'daber, di'ein mishnayosav sturos lo, he doesn't have an absolute grasp and clarity over the knowledge of the Torah in all its areas. Mikol hakom, who may vin, the yochalach ria bein svaroseim shall ashnayim acherim. This is the middle category, right? There are going to be three levels. The highest level is going to be the medaber, who's going to make final determinations about the law itself. Then there's the bulk of the members of Sanhedrin, we'll call the other 20, and they can, you know, they can be part of the bezdin, but they don't play the active role. What do I mean by the active role? There's this middle category, which is the third in the triumvirate, who is capable of being machria bein svaroseim shal shnayim achronim. In other words, acher. He, this third gentleman, is not capable, because he doesn't have that clarity of knowledge of the Torah, of making achra b'shikol hadas and coming up with his own understanding and interpretation of the Torah. He's not what you call a chefetz shel Torah. He's not a walking sefer Torah, so he doesn't have the ability to interpret the law, but he is capable of getting involved in the deliberations. If let's say these two medabrim, each one comes up with a different achra, a different decision as to what the abstract principles of the Torah should be, he could come in as a third party and weigh the svaros, the logical arguments of both of these individuals, both of these medabrim, and he can come to some conclusion about which of these svaros is more acceptable, is more eisgehalten. Again, there's a very subtle point over here. It's very hard for me to clarify the difference between the two. In other words, I would have said that if this gentleman, this number three on the list, you know, he's third on the party line, right? If he's capable of understanding all the logical arguments of both and then coming to some conclusion by weighing these arguments one against the other, I would think he's already at the level of a medaber. But I guess the medaber is the one who comes up with the svaras. He's not capable of initiating those svaras. He doesn't have that clarity. So if you know the Torah very well, you can always say, well, in this case, it should be similar to this principle. So you know the Mishnah. Now you have the case in front of you, the scenario. And then you decide, based on that Mishnah, that this is what the Hakras Halacha should be. So you can make that analogy only because you have clarity in the understanding, the grasp of the Mishnah. This third individual doesn't have that clarity or grasp of the material itself, or the Mishnah itself. But once you give him the svara and you try to equate the case in front of you with a principle that was formulated in a certain Mishnah, he can argue against that. He has enough of an acumen, of an expertise in understanding the Torah, that he can counter argue against some sort of analogy between the Mishnah or the abstract rules and this particular scenario that we're dealing with. So now we have three elements that make up the court as far as Chachma is concerned. You have the two top people who are called the Medabrim. Then you have the middle category of someone who could hear the two Svaras. He can't come up with those Svaras on his own, but he can definitely make Achra and compare and contrast these two Svaras if they're at loggerheads and determine which is more compelling. And then you have the rest of the of the best, then they can deliberate about the case, but they don't have the capacity, the capability of climbing up to the abstract rules and decide whether or not there is an equation or analogy between the case that they're dealing with, the situation, and the abstract laws, because that requires a total mastery of the abstract laws with absolute clarity. That's not what they have. Once they get down to deliberations and trying to make a final decision, they have enough knowledge and they have enough experience to make that decision, but not to go up to the abstract worlds of the principles and regulations of the halacha, like we say, mashmita me'ar Sinai. That they can't deal with. They don't know in a clear way the abstract laws, but they can tell you that given a certain rule, let's understand the deliberations and the weigh the evidence and come to some conclusion as far as the Nidon is concerned. Once you have A, B, and C, these three representatives, you have a Sanhedrin. This would answer all the kashas that we had before. Because, number one, Rabbi Yehuda bar Rava is not arguing with Rabbi Yochanan. He himself would also require that every single member of the court, in order to qualify, has to know 70 languages. He's not talking about expertise in languages. That's not the issue. The issue is Chachma. Where did we find a discussion about Chachma as a qualification for the Sanhedrin, for the judges? That was this whole sugi in the middle of Rabbi Yehuda bar Rava about Yodei L'Taharas HaSheret. So we're definitely on the right track now. We're dealing with Chachma. And the next statement of Rabbi Yehuda bar Rava is also addressing the issue of Chachma. And what is the Chachma? It has to have these representatives who are on such a high level with total grasp of the Torah, etc., as we discussed. Now we can add another answer. Where is Shimon HaTimni in this picture? The Gemara is not saying that Shimon HaTimni is a fourth Medaber. No, no, no. There are only three Medabrim. Who are those? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva. What was the role of Shimon HaTimni? He was listening to the arguments and the comparisons, the analogies to the abstract principles of the Torah, and he decided that if there was some deliberation back and forth between Lama Zogin, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva, he could say, well, I think the logic of Rabbi Yeshua is much more compelling than that of Rabbi Akiva. So in a sense, he would be the third member of a triumvirate to make a Sanhedrin to Sanhedrin. But you know what? We're going to praise Beitar because they had three people who were all Medabrim, or Yavna that had three people who were Medabrim, plus they had this fourth member of the court, who was Shimon HaTimni. He was again one notch below a Medaber, but he was very, very close to a Medaber. What other questions do we have? I think we covered all the questions.
The last question was...
Oh, yeah, that for sure. All the members of Sanhedrin have to be Mekabel Yedus, and Rav never questioned that. In order for them to be Mekabel Yedus, they have to know 70 languages. Our discussion here is not about Kabbalas Yedus. It's not about the issue of languages and Eid. It's about Chachma. And what we need is a Sanhedrin that has within it the capacity to climb up to the abstract worlds of Mishnayis, of principles, and have a total, absolute grasp of those principles with clarity. And we need at least two members of the court who are able to do this. However, he says, L'chora, yesh l'tmoa. We're not out in the clear here. Why? It's not absolutely clear why, according to Rav Shrira Goin, is it enough to have two members of the court who fit this bill as medabrim? If I can find that, just one second. Yeah, I'm not finding it right this second, but I'll find it as we go along. Oh, here it is. Now again, until now, we've been dealing with the Yad Ramah. This is all those who are against Rashi, the Yad Ramah, the Meiri, and the Ran. Now Rabbi Yonah steps into the fray, he jumps into the fire. He says the following, Koshali, Shemashma mikach, Shechutz mi'elu ayodim ledaber v'lishmoa, Ein tzorach shiushara dayonim b'sanhedrin, yodim, afil lishmoa. Ketzad yuchlu im kein l'kayim v'shoftu eidu v'itzilua eidu. Meaning that the Torah commands the Sanhedrin to be able to protect the Nidon and save him from this condemnation. But if they're not able to be part of the deliberation, how can you say v'shoftu eidu v'itzilua eidu about this entire Sanhedrin? Again, we're talking about 23 judges who can put a person to death. I would add a little bit more to this. I'm trying to find it. I don't think it was my own svara, but we're talking about a Sanhedrin. So you tell me that there are two Yodim Ledaber, and then there's a third who's Yodei Lishmoa. How could that be? I mean, we have a principle that Sanhedrin has to be made up of 23 judges. Not only that, even the smallest Beis Din that the Torah recognizes is made up of three judges. Right? It says Elohim three times. You remember that back on Daf Gimel. So what good is it if you have two Medabrim? What is the significance, the status of two Medabrim, two members of the court, who are Medabrim? You know, they know the abstract principles. And if that's a requirement in Beis Din, in Sanhedrin at least, then at least a minimum of three. You know, the Torah says Elohim three times. You know, there's no such thing as a Beis Din that's made up of two judges. So if you have this requirement of Yodei Ledaber, well, what good is it if there are two members of the court who are Yodei Ledaber? Well, what's the significance of the number two?
For Eidus, you have to have two. For collecting tzedakah and a legitimate kosher way, you have to have two. So there is a...
For Eidus?
Right.
Ah, you mean two Aiden to test. Right. But I'm talking about the Sanhedrin.
I'm saying for establishing Sanhedrin members three, but I'm saying
that's going to make the final decision. So if you need a Sanhedrin that knows the rules of the Torah, because their authority goes beyond just, you know, weighing the claims and the counterclaims of these two individuals, but rather they, you know, like the Pasuk says, okay, that might not be so relevant, but the Pasuk says, Ki Yipolei Davar. And so forth and so on. Then you go to the Sanhedrin to clarify the law itself, and now you have only two members of the court that know how to clarify the law. Had those two members make up a Beis Din? I mean, we don't have a valid, we don't have any recognition of a bez that's made up of two judges. In any event, there's a Rambam, and the Rambam says that kol ir she'ein bo shnayim echad ledaber ve'echad l'shmoa. So that again sounds like Rav Shrira Gaon, because he says echad ledaber ve'echad l'shmoa. He doesn't mention anything about their knowledge of languages. So this concept of ledaber l'shmo is a whole new concept, which makes sense according to Rav Shrira Gaon. But again, it's very odd, because if the Bezin has to be made up of 23 judges, two of which are Deo ledaber v'yachad l'shmoa, so Rabbeinu Yonah argues that l'shmoa means that they're able of understanding the claims and the counterclaims, that means that the balance of the court, which is the other 20 judges, they're not capable of l'shmoa even, in that lowest level. So he quotes here Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah says that Kavanas Aramami Shetzorech She'echad Yochal Lish'ol Ulahashiv Bechala Tarakula the Ilu Shara Dayonim Einom Yodim Lish'ol Ulahashiv Bechala Tarakula, but in Mikolakom Yodim Haim Lish'ol Ulahashiv B'miktas Adinim Shimlo Kein Loya Moshivin Osam B'Sanhedrin. So the Kesef Mishnah throws in another element into the equation. He says that when the Rambam says he needs Shnayim who are Echad L'Dabar V'Echad L'Shmoa, what he means is that there's one Dayan, you can ask him a question anywhere in the Torah, B'Kol HaTorah Kula, and he'll give you an answer. And then you have Echad L'Shmoa. Echad L'Shmoa is a reference to Shara HaDayanim. And what qualifications do they have? You can't ask him a question in every single area in the Torah and expect and anticipate that they'll be able to respond. But nevertheless, they know how to ask questions and answer questions, resolve problems, b'miktas ad-dinim, in certain areas of the Torah. And that alone is sufficient for them to sit on the Beis Din. But we have to have, according to the Rambam, at least one individual, echad ledaber, who knows how to ask and answer questions in any area in the Torah. He's an expert in everything. He's a kolbaynik. He's in what we call in Hebrew, ish hashkolot, if you're familiar with that phrase. Haran mechadish b'divrei Aram, she'ein kavanoso she'yeshvu b'sanhedrin shnayim ayodim ledaber b'divrei Torah v'echel l'shmoa, el she'yu min ha'talmidim hayoshvim b'sholosh shuros lifnei ha'dayonim. We didn't get to the sugi yet of shuros, but there's a line of Talmidim that sat in a row right behind the Dayanim. And Chutz min Ayoshvim b'Sanhedrin. So we're going to see that there were four rows. The top row, the front row, was made up of the members of the court. And then there were three rows of Talmidim. Let's call them apprentices. You know, they were learning the ropes, learning Shimush, how to paskin. And according to the Ran's interpretation of the Rambam, you cannot set up these shuros for Talmidim unless amongst the Talmidim who are sitting in these three shuros in front of the Dayanim, there is one who is a Yodei Ledaber, and one is Yodei Lishmoa. Again, I'll read it again. Ein kavanoso sheyeshu b'sanhedrin shnayim ayodim ledaber b'divrei tor v'echad lishmoa, el shiu kol shiu min ha-talmidim amongst the talmidim ayoshvim v'shol shuris lifnei ha-dayonim chutz min ayoshvim b'sanhedrin. In other words, there's no question that the Dayanim themselves sitting in the front row that are made up of 23 judges and sitting in 23 chairs, they have to know a Bekiyas in Torah that you can ask them a question anywhere and they can answer. Who is invited to sit in the other three shuros of the Talmidim? Then you don't have to have the level of knowledge that they're bekiyum, you know, that they know the Torah. But we do require that echad shehe medaber v'echad shomea, that amongst the rows, I'm not sure if he's talking about each individual row or maybe all the rows, there's got to be amongst the talmidim at least one person who's yodea l'damer and one who's yodea l'shma. Again, the question is, if you have that, why isn't such a person part of the Sanhedrin itself? I guess maybe because they didn't get smicha yet.
Reserve.
Yeah, maybe they're not yet ready for smicha. But they are yodea l'damer. That's the Kesef Mishnah.
That would qualify Shimon
HaTimni, right? He can certainly help qualify all the Talmidim who are sitting in all the rows because he's considered a Yodel and Dab. Excellent. Now let's go back for a moment to Rashi. According to Rashi, the whole point of the Sugya is to know the languages and to be Makabal the Avis. And the Gemara says that there was a fourth member of the court in Beitar, his name was Shimon HaTimni, who sat on the karka. I'm sorry, I said Beitar, I meant Yavne, I'm sorry. Right, in Yavne. So now, we have a kasha of Rabbeinu Yonah. Matzot yesh bi arba. Why does the Beis Din of Yavne have to be made up of four judges who know the 70 languages? Hare dai b'shlosha. As long as we have three judges who know, who are proficient in the 70 languages, shchal aleihem shem beis din le'inyan kabbalas eidus. Right, we're talking about a Sanhedrin of 23. So what good is if you have three who know the 70 languages? The answer is for kabbalas eidus. And that's Rashi Shita. Again, the Rishonim disagree because they think that all of the Beis Din has to be Makabali. But according to Rashi Shita, three is enough because the number three is a magic number. It constitutes a compromise, comprises a Beis Din. So what's the point of the number four? Madua mevur b'braisa shervias ein lamala himenu. Oh, okay, so we didn't read the next braisa, but if you see Meisve, we're going to quote a braisa that says shlishis. In other words, if we have three people who know Shivim Lashon, is Chachma. Chachma means, you know, we can rely on such a Beis Din, but it's not the ideal Beis Din. But Revius, if you have a fourth person who knows 70 languages, Ein Lamala Heimena. That's already a different, qualitatively, that's a different level of Sanhedrin. So the Rabbeinu Yonah asks the following. Why does it say that when you have a fourth person who's a judge that knows 70 languages, that's already ein lamala heimenu? That's like a halig, that's the holiest Beis Din that you can think of. What difference does it make if you have three or four? All you need is three to constitute a Beis Din for Kabbalah Seder. So what's the point of the fourth Yodeh B'chol Lashon? The imnoma shekol sheyesh yoser dayonim ayodim b'shiv losha reza meshubach. If you tell me that the more the better, the more the merrier, right? We say that if we have a fourth judge who knows 70 languages, that's even greater. He says, I don't accept that because in kain maduim avur b'braisa shirvias ein lamala mimeno. It says if you have a fourth judge who knows 70 languages, that's the greatest, highest Beis Din that there is. Hare, that's not true. Olif yoser shu chamisha. It'll be better if you had six judges who know 70 languages. So why do you stop at the number four? Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't have any solution to this problem. So now the Gemara asks a kasha on Rav. Why? Because Rav said you need two judges who are Yodea Ledaber, and they have the chachma of 70 languages. That's according to Rashi's pshat. And here in the Brice it says that shlishis chachma, all you need is three judges who know 70 languages, and that's called chachma or chachama. So we see clearly that according to this Braisa, what's the minimum number of judges to reach that lowest level of Chachama and qualify as a Beis Din, as a Sanhedrin, before we get to the higher level of Revius? The number?
Three.
So we need three. Rav says all you need is two. Two judges who know Shivim Lashon. So the Gemara answers, Hu di Omer ki hai Tana, that Rav accepts the opinion of a different Tana. The Sanya, we learned in the Braisa, Shnia Chachama. If you have two judges that know 70 languages, that's called a Chachama, and that's a Ksherah, that's a Bez, and that's Kosher. Shlishes Ein Lama, Ushlishes Ein Lamalim. And in the highest level of a Bez, would have three judges who know 70 languages. Okay, Rabosai, so we'll stop here. If anyone has a pencil, okay, we'll make a little note here where we got up to. Okay, thank you very much. Wish everyone a great day. And then tomorrow, I believe that it will make a seal. Okay then?